Those of you who don't know me, I'm Brad Prescott with the National Immunization Program, the Immunization Services Division. Want to welcome everybody that has stuck around for the after conference party or meeting or whatever you want to call it. Means a lot that there is some interest, either that or you have late flights, couldn't change them. But either way, you're here, and that's the important thing. We have a lot that we want to cover today, and what I'm going to do, we want to keep it as informal as possible, try to share as much information with you as possible that we know right now, and a lot of what we know is changing all the time. We're getting updates daily, and when Vaccine University comes up in a couple of months, there will be even additional information that we can share with anybody. But today what we wanted to do, Angela Vargas Rosales, who is the management official for the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, will start us off with a welcome and then give us a VTRAC status update. Jeannie Santoli will follow that, talking about VTRAC scope and functionality. I'll then provide some updated information on the identity proofing process, followed by Lance Rodewald, who will do the VTRAC's rollout and deployment, and talk a little bit about the schedule. Julie Orta will give you information on the contact center. Nathan Crawford, a presentation on the role of the GAC and how that'll play into the transition to VTRAC's. And Warren Williams, who will be talking about the external information systems, such as registries, and how that interface, or we think that the interfacing with VTRAC's will take place. Following that, we will have a Q&A session with all of the participants and other subject matter experts available to answer any questions that you might have. There'll be about three slides that I'll present at that point that will talk a little bit about what the future looks like for you getting ready to transition to VTRAC's, what you can start doing now to get ready, those types of things. So we have this room for 3 hours. I don't know if it'll take 3 hours to go through this. It probably will not. A lot of that depends on the number of questions that you all have. But we'll try to keep it moving and get through this. And I wanted to introduce the speakers up front so we don't have to do that as each one comes up. So now I will turn it over to Angela to get us started off for the afternoon.
Thank you, Brad. Good afternoon, everyone. And on behalf of NCRD, once again, I would just like to welcome you to this afternoon session. And the focus to this afternoon is VTRAC's. Well, first, just to give you just some level setting, and you know, we've talked about VTRAC's many times before. VTRAC's is part of that larger umbrella for VMBIP, that Vaccine Management Business Improvement Project, which started some years ago. And you know, it actually started with centralized distribution. Well, we went through the actual implementation of centralized distribution, where we went from multi or many distribution methodologies and many distribution sites to two national locations, and of course that contract was awarded to McKesson, and we were successful in that endeavor. Well, now we're turning our attention to VTRAC's, the Vaccine Tracking System. You know, there are two other pieces of the VMBIP, the larger VMBIP umbrella. And one of them is ongoing, and that's the internal efficiencies, just looking at what we do, how we can continue to do that CQI, that continuous quality improvement, and improve upon even the things that we've implemented, such as centralized distribution. And then as we go forward with even the funds management processes and how we can continue to reduce and minimize vaccine wastage and address various storage issues and things of that nature. Then the last portion of it is will be stockpile. In this particular release of VTRAC's, of course, stockpile is not a part. However, in the future, we will be looking at stockpile and how we can take advantage and leverage our resources to bring stockpile on board. You know, before I go any further, there is someone else I would just like to introduce that's here today with us. We actually have Tom Tippett, who's here with us, and he's with SAP Public Services. He's our project officer, and I'm going to speak more about SAP Public Services, but I wanted to introduce him to you. He's down front. He popped up for just a quick second, but he is here with us today. So, I want to talk about VTRAX. I want to give you just a little information about where we are, just a level set to tell you what it is and where we plan to go with VTRAX and how we plan to get there, basically. You know, when we talk about VTRAX, VTRAX is an online provider ordering and automated approval system. It's going to give us visibility that we have not had before and you have not had from a grantee perspective into your spending plan statuses and things of that nature, into actually being able to status your vaccine orders. So it's going to provide that type of visibility. Once we implement the VTRAX, as I like to say, that it will fulfill that vaccine management life cycle, more or less. We have the centralized distribution piece, which pushes the vaccine out. When we add VTRAX, that is the piece that focuses on how we order the vaccine. And it will connect with how we push it out, but also it will connect to how we pay for the vaccine on the back end. So it will actually complete that vaccine management life cycle as we move forward with the program. Just to focus your attention for a second, just to talk about the overall operating structure of VMBIP as well as VTRAX. It's an NCRD, the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, under the leadership of Ann Schuckett, as the actual management official for NCRD, as well as the project officer and COTAR for VTRAX. It sort of falls under my domain. We also have a project management office, and that is chaired by Edith Chadwell, who is also our VMBIP coordinator. We brought Edith on from FMO. Edith, will you also stand? Edith is here on the front row. She is the one who's actually working across all domains to make sure we keep things coordinated as we move along, and to make sure with VTRAX to help us keep everything on track. Then we have, including the program management office, there are actually four domains under project management. We have the vaccine programmatic team, which is led by Lance Rodewall and Gigi Santoli. We have the VTRAX project technical team that is currently led by our acting lead for informatics. That's Nabil Aga Khan. Nabil, stand. He's on the front row. He's also my acting. He's also the acting project manager for VTRAX. We have a new project manager that's actually starting Monday, and his name is Robert Phillips, Bob Phillips. I'm not sure if he was able to join us today, but he will be starting on Monday. We also have an organizational change management component, which is OCM, who we brought on, Paul Albamonte. He's not able to be with us today, but he's leading that effort. And then, as I said before, we have the PMO piece that's led by Edith Chadwell. Talking about the actual governance model, once again, we have several different layers or several different councils overseeing VMBIP as well as our VFC dollars. We actually have the CDC VFC Financial Management Oversight Executive Governance Board, which is led by Ann Schuckett. And that was transitioned in the past from actual Mitchell Coin when we had CCID. We also have the VFC Management Issues Working Group, which is co-led by Edith as well as Lance. We actually have the VMBIP Steering Team, and that's actually, I chair that particular committee, and we need to update this slide because it is a fully functioning committee. And then, of course, we have the PMO. And then we also have the CDC Information Technology Resource Council, the IR, which Tanya Martin, who is our senior advisor for informatics for OID, Office of Infectious Disease, she serves as our liaison for that particular committee. Tanya is also here with us today. Tanya, will you stand, please? And then we have the GAC, the Grantee Advisory Committee, a very important committee, because it is through this committee that we can actually hear your voice and get input from you as grantees. And that is actually led by, and his name just, I just had a memory lapse. Nathan, I'm sorry. Nathan, I apologize. Nathan, please stand. Everyone who knows me know I'm not good with names. His name should have been on the screen. I apologize, Nathan. Okay, just want to tell you where we are with VTRAX. You know, I think probably the last time you got an update, we were in that delayed period because there was a stall because of H1N1. The project was delayed. The project has been restarted. We did select a systems integrator, and that is SAP Public Services, and that's who Tom Tippett is with. And they were selected through a competitive process. SAP does business with many federal agencies, such as DOD, lots of state and local government agencies, as well as aerospace and defense contractors as well. When you look at the list, it's up on the board. I won't go through them all, but such as NASA, as you can see, as well as other U.S. Army logistics modernization. So they've done a lot of work with the federal government as well as the commercial sector. With the actual project, we've entered into a firm fixed price contract for release one, and this is going to give us a lot of the basic functionality. We're looking for a solution, we refer to it as a solution. The solution will be delivered to us in October of this year. The actual contract period of performance is from the end of February through February 2011. The official start date was actually March. And what we're gonna do is maximize configuration with this particular technology and we're gonna maximize configuration and minimize customization. SAP is really known for their COTS product, basically commercial off-the-shelf products, and that is what we're going to really maximize and leverage in this particular endeavor. What SAP will be doing is using best practices to actually match, to actually fulfill the requirements and over 1,000 requirements that have been gathered over the past few years that went into the blueprinting sessions that we engaged in with other contractors in the past to actually fulfill the terms of this contract and deliver us a solution come October. As we move forward with the development of VTRAX, there's going to be a lot of focus on playback, play forward, working sessions as they go through with their development, their design, as well as their development. We're working collaboratively with SAP to make sure that they come back, they let us hear what their concepts are, whatever they have, to the best of their ability, in keeping with the contractual guidelines, so that we will know what's going on to make sure that they're on the right path and we're meeting the intent of the contract. So there'll be many playback, play forward type sessions. And once again, the release one is based on basic functionality. And then once we get it out there, then, of course, you know, when you're talking about a software release, there's always that continuous quality improvement. There's always things that you can always do better. So, of course, there will be future releases as we continue to refine what we do and how we do it. This is actually the timeline for VTRAX development. Right now, they're currently in somewhat, they're in the requirements analysis phase, but as you will see, these phases actually overlap. So, where we are with the contracts, we're in the requirements analysis phase, but it also overlaps with the design phase. What's not shown here on this slide, in mid-July, they will come into our environment, meaning that we will bring that solution over on our side, and that will be our true first glimpse of the actual solution. And after that, we have our go-live date in October. And of course, there is the O&M. Another key thing is from October to December, we will actually have the pilot with our grantees. There are the four VPOP grantees, as well as we're adding two additional registry grantees to that pilot segment. So there will be a pilot period between October and December for that pilot, with final disposition of the contract being in February. As of February 2011. And that's it for the actual status update. And now we will hear from Jeannie Santoli.
Hi there. Thanks everyone for being here after a long, exciting but long conference. I'm going to talk over the next few minutes about some of the systems we have now and what will happen to those systems when we have VTracs in place, and then some of the functionality that you can think about at the provider level, at the grantee level, and at the CDC level. So this slide actually shows six different systems that we have now, some of which you're very familiar with and others of which we are very familiar with on the CDC side. And these systems work together, although not in a connected fashion sometimes, in order to help us do our vaccine business. So the first is VOFA. I'm sure everybody in the room is very familiar with VOFA, which helps forecast your vaccine purchases for a 12-month period by vaccine month and funding type. And you know, needs to obviously, that's a system that we depend on, that you work hard to keep that system updated. The next system is VACMAN. And VACMAN needs almost no introduction in this group, but of course that's how you place bulk orders and also how provider orders are placed. VACMAN talks to a system on our side after the orders come in called NIPVAC, and that processes those bulk orders that you submit. It processes the provider orders and gets those things ready to go either to the manufacturer or the distributor in the case of the provider orders. It's also where the grantee budgets live, and it's where vaccine allocations live. So it's a very critical system. It's where our contracts live. It manages a lot of our vaccine business on the CDC side and manages what comes in from the grantees from VACMAN. All three of those systems will actually be replaced by VTracs. So as grantees are coming on to VTracs, those functions will be handled by the VTrac system. Another system that we have for data at CDC is the data warehouse. Right now, you all receive either can access those reports or have assistance from other grantees who have public health advisors in accessing those reports. The data warehouse combines order, shipment, and inventory data, and it's a broadly used system. Data warehouse will remain, although it will be incorporated in some particular way within the VTrac system, which will have data warehouse capabilities as well. We also have at CDC a system we call ICE, and that's the Integrated Contracts Expert. That's where we do our vaccine procurement. So that's where our contracts come from. That's also where we do changes to the contracts. We add money to the contracts, and if there's a new vaccine added. So that's an important system. That will remain a system that we take information from and put into VTracs. And then we have the United Financial Management System, UFMS. That's HHS's financial management system. It's our management system for finances of record. And that will maintain and will also have some interaction between that system and VTracs. So this is sort of a picture of a lot of systems that work together now. But again, the goal with VTracs is that these systems will be able to work together much more closely. In terms of the functionality of the system, and this is not a very detailed set of slides, but it paints a picture of the CDC level, the grantee level, and the provider level. So at the CDC level, because this system will replace NIPVAC, obviously it will allow CDC to allocate vaccine and budgets across each of the immunization grantees. It will use the grantee spend plan information to decrement those grantee budgets, much as NIPVAC does now, and it will be able to do so in terms of the proper accounting. So VFC, Section 317, state, local, ERA, and other, in the event that another funding source comes our way. So this is the system that will manage the decrementing of those budgets. It'll allow us to put money onto vaccine contracts, or show how we've put money on, and then follow the balances and make sure that that reconciles with the balances in our official financial system of record. And it'll provide visibility into funding, spend plans, and the vaccine that we have at the distributor and in stockpile to a certain extent. As Angela mentioned, full functionality for the pediatric stockpiles is not planned for release one, but we have some portions of some of our stockpiles at McKesson, and that inventory will be monitored through VTracs, just as the operating inventory that's at our depots is monitored through VTracs. looking at the picture from the perspective of the grantees of this group, this system will allow you to enroll and manage providers. That's work that you're doing right now in VACMAN. To use business rules to manage vaccine orders, such as the requirement for a temperature monitor to be submitted or doses administered data to be submitted with a vaccine order. In terms of the VOFA perspective, you will actually be able to use VTRACS to develop and manage spend plans and also to manage your vaccine formulary. So right now, the work that folks do on paper forms in many circumstances will actually live in VTRACS. The system will also allow you to have some of the capabilities that we have in terms of allocating vaccine among your providers in a shortage situation. So as we allocate vaccine to grantees and then that caps orders, this system will allow the same capability for grantees with their providers. It'll also allow vaccine ordering online for providers or the exportation of those orders from external information systems. And Warren will talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. And then finally, you'll receive routine reports and have visibility looking at the distribution. So looking at the orders, knowing, you know, some status of orders and when they've been distributed, and then also the status of the spend plan and the budget. So actually being able to see on a regular basis, look in there and run a report that tells you what your balances in the various funding sources are. And then finally, for providers, providers will be able to order vaccine online, which could mean placing a vaccine order through VTRACS or through an external information system, if that's the route that the state is taking. It'll also allow providers to receive status updates of the order, so a visibility providers have not previously had other than through you all. It'll allow the inputting of accountability data electronically, in certain of those data electronically. The ability to copy previous orders, so to be able to use some work minimizing experience when there's an order that needs to be replicated for a future order, to check the status of vaccine orders, and to receive important updates from CDC and from grantees. The last slide just sort of lays out the VPOP pilot, the VTRACS pilot, and VTRACS, to show you a little bit of how those three compare and contrast. So in terms of the integration of external information systems, that has not been a possibility in VPOP, but will be incorporated into the VTRACS pilot and into full VTRACS. VACMAN use has been part of the VPOP pilot, but it won't be what enrolled pilot grantees do in the VTRACS pilot or in the VTRACS system. Order status information in VPOP at this point is limited to order confirmation, but in the VTRACS pilot, that will be expanded to include shipment information, and that'll be the case in VTRACS as well. Grantee access has not been a feature of the VPOP, but obviously it's a key and important feature for the VTRACS pilot grantees and for all grantees in the full VTRACS system. All of these systems obviously have been able to provide some online ordering for providers and submission of accountability data. So I think that's my overview, and I'll stop there. Thanks a lot.
All right, on to identity proofing. I talked a little bit about this in a session late this morning. It was a VPOP breakout session. I don't know how many of you were able to attend that, so you have a little advanced preview of what I'm going to talk about. But just to kind of set the stage for what identity proofing is and how it worked during VPOP, identity proofing is the process that any user of a CDC system has to go through to prove that that person entering information in that CDC system is who they say they are. And when we set up VPOP initially, it was very cumbersome, where every user had to submit a driver's license and a credit card to prove their identity. We balked at that and had a little bit of a scaled back version, not much, but it was a little easier to deal with. But each, we had two different mechanisms then for VPOP, one being that a federal employee who was assigned to a state or local health department was already ID proof because they have an ID badge. They could in turn ID proof other staff members at the state or city level, and then those persons become designated proofers and they can do it on down the line, kind of a cascading system. The other option was the use of a notary. And even though there are notaries spread out throughout the country, it's always difficult for a provider to leave a busy office and go out and find a notary and complete that process. And what we found was there were people that would start the process but would never finish. And this ended up being probably the biggest lesson learned that we had in VPOP, was that we had to do something to streamline this process as we move forward. Well, what I'm going to talk about now is what we think this is going to look like. And, you know, we've been getting information in as recent as today, authorizing what the process will be. And we're going to be able to take advantage of systems that already are in place, like VFC enrollment processes and things like that. It will also take into consideration the logical flow from CDC to grantee, grantee to provider, provider to staff. And what it is definitely going to do is get rid of the need for credit cards, the need for in-person identity proofing, faxing of those driver's licenses to an office in Atlanta that processes all of the security for us. So what's going to happen is through the VFC program, grantees enroll a responsible provider based on different laws and regulations at the state level for who can or cannot be a registered provider. And part of the VFC regulations state that you must check against the state certification board website or whatever documents you use to make sure that that is a physician or provider in good standing. You also have to make site visits upon entry into the VFC program, and then subsequently thereafter, depending on, you know, how often you can get out, every year or up to every once every 4 years, or, you know, as we're moving into new requirements now. And also through the enrollment process, you have annual recertification where the providers must send in that paperwork to you every year to remain in the VFC program. So what will happen for that provider is they, since you are proofing their identity through enrolling them in the program, you would then, as a grantee, submit a list to CDC of those providers, and in turn, those providers would be responsible for the users in their office that they designate to order a vaccine on their behalf. So the, you know, anytime a person in almost any business gets selected for a job, there's certain paperwork that they fill out that serves as identity proofing, and that paperwork will be maintained at that provider's office. Provider also submits that list of authorized users on their behalf to the grantee. The grantee submits that to CDC's Secure Access Management Services System, or SAMS. And in the breakout session today, Claudia in California said that had people asking, who's Sam and why is he sending me emails? But that is the, that's the system that will send out the invitation to folks to allow them to roll into the VTRACs. So some of the things that we will also have to do to allow this to happen is change some of the wording on the current VFC enrollment form. We have not done that yet. We're in the process of making those changes, but it'll be language that when the provider signs that enrollment form, they're also saying that they will be responsible for the staff that they vouch for, if there's any turnover in office staff, those types of things, and only authorized users will use VTRACs. So as we do get this signed on the dotted line, we will get more information out to everybody. But I think this is so much better than we ever dreamed that this would turn out to be. Going from a driver's license and a credit card now to what you do daily to make sure that these providers are legitimate, and sending an email with those names to CDC to complete that process is a tremendous win on all of our parts. And I do really want to acknowledge the four VPOP grantees, California, Chicago, Colorado, and Massachusetts, because they went out there, they got bloody for the rest of you so that you didn't have to, because they did take some lumps throughout this process. And if we hadn't have involved them in the VPOP process, we wouldn't know now that we needed a different, better process. And, we would have really been behind the eight ball starting out with VTRACS. So that is primarily it for this part of it, and I will turn it over to Lance to talk about rollout.
Hey, thanks, Brad. One thing I think it's important to also say that there was a lot of behind the scenes work trying to make it so that the identity proofing would be more realistic and really take, as Brad said, take advantage of your special relationship that you know these providers are legit and they're able to order vaccine, that they do that from you. And so Brad, John Bisser, Nabil, and Tanya did a lot of behind the scenes work, and a fellow named Roderick Duff, who's not here. And so I think that's something that will make a difference. It's a lot easier to do things through email and through a system rather than trying to get a third party like a notary public to have to deal with this. Now, unlike my grantee session a couple days ago, I think I have only 1/20th of the number of slides, meaning I have one slide. And so I'm getting more and more concise as I go along. And one thing, what I'd like to do is just sort of walk through this pretty busy slide in here. And a number of you have probably seen this before. We did an all-hands meeting for the division, which included all of the field staff. And the slide set was shared there, and I think that the slide set was shared, therefore, among the program managers. And so what we have here is a proposed grantee and provider rollout schedule. And I'm just going to walk right through this kind of chronologically and roll by roll in here. So on October 1st, this is when SAP Public Services will have delivered us VTRACS, delivered us a product that works, has been tested, that people have been trained to do, and is loaded with the data that VTRACS needs in order to manage the system. And starting right thereafter, we will have the four VPOP pilots, Chicago, Massachusetts, Colorado, and California, on the system, able to use the new VTRACS back office that Jeannie described, that will have all the capabilities, such as being able to check the status of your funds, being able to check the status of an order of vaccine that was placed either by you or by the providers that are enrolled in the system. The providers that these four pilot grantees that are already identity proofed and already on the system would be able to order vaccine. And of course, you will be able to review the orders, to change the orders, to approve the orders. I mean, the state and the grantee is in control here. In addition, we expect, as Angela said, two registry using grantees, and I think we're looking at Michigan and Washington State. And these grantees will be able to use their registry for their providers to order vaccine. And so we'll be able to have that part of VTRACS and that part of order entry working starting October 1st. And so these six grantees will have 3 months in here to get used to the system. We'll kind of get a feel for, you know, already be well trained on this system, but basically a chance to see how this new back office really looks and feels, how it is to order a vaccine on the system, get the whole complete VTRAX experience. Unlike, as Jeannie pointed out, with the VPOP pilots, it really isn't VTRAX because it doesn't have all of the smarts behind VTRAX and all of the data behind VTRAX. Then what we're looking at in January 1st is what I think everybody in the room here would probably agree is an aggressive roll-on schedule for the grantees. And when all of us in the room here, at least I think all of us in the room here, would say, well, this is pretty aggressive to go 20 in January roughly, 20 roughly in February, and 20 roughly in March to roll everybody on, there's a lot of pressure from on up above. Can't it be done quicker? You know, can't it all be done, you know, now? And so I think that we tried to find some sort of sweet spot in here. And I'd like to talk through how we see this sweet spot kind of working. So when a grantee rolls on during this 3-month phase of time, they will roll on themselves, not their providers. And so just like you all order vaccine on behalf of your providers now using VacMan, you'll roll on to VTRAX and will order vaccine using VTRAX on behalf of your providers. And so your work is going to be ordering vaccine still, but it will end up being in a different system. So you'll get this period of time to get the look and the feel of VTRAX. What's it like to order, to place an order of vaccine? What's it like to have visibility into these vaccine orders? What's it like to have visibility into your money that's in there for ordering vaccine? What's it like to have the VTRAX reports that are going to be very, very helpful to you? How is it to make some ad hoc reports that your health commissioner says, well, we want to know about this? You know, we say, well, now we know how we can find out about this. Or how's the ordering going for your set of providers? Well, you'll end up having reports and visibility to things that you just don't have now. And so this will give a period of time to get used to that. This will also give CDC a period of time to get used to that with you. In the absence of having a whole bunch of providers roll onto the system, and so it's gonna allow CDC to focus our attention on you, your new back office, our new back office, without having to worry about the oodles of provider questions that may be cropping up at the same time. At the end of that, there's this blue octagon. Big date, obviously. So that's when VacMan goes away. And I know Jeannie is fond of saying that VacMan, you know, essentially saved the pandemic, which is true. But I think that even Jeannie, you're going to be happy to see VacMan go away, I think, if I could make a prediction. And I think probably everybody in the room will be happy to see VacMan go away. And then what we see here is what I think everybody here would probably say is a pretty aggressive roll-on schedule for your providers. What we're looking at is over this 9-month to 1-year period of time, and you can see there's a little bit of a premium going early because you get a little bit longer time to enroll your providers. We'd like everybody to enroll 85% of your providers. So that really meant the work that Brad and company did in terms of streamlining the providers so that it's a matter of either sending emails to CDC or picking out of your VTRAX, you know, your list of providers who are enrolled in VTRAX that you have been ordering vaccine on, picking out that list and saying these are ones that we want to invite onto the system, something that's done on the computer rather than done on the fax machine, something that's done on the computer in your own office rather than hiring a notary public, something that's, you know, that's done electronically rather than physically. It's still work, and we know it's work, and 85% is a lot. Every other immunization goal is 90%, and so we compromised and made an 85% goal in here. And just like we got some pressure that, gee, that 3 months, can't it be done quicker? You know, we got some pressure, you know, that 1-year period, can't it be done quicker? And so we're in, you know, I think we're a little bit in the middle, The best that we can do is to try to lower barriers to make it easier for you to do your work, and that's certainly what's been done, and I think the ID proofing is a good example of that. Now, the next question you're going to want to say is, well, if I have an enrolled provider, does that mean that they can suddenly order vaccine? And that's a switch that you're going to have control over. You may want to enroll your providers and then pilot with a few of them. How are they going to, you know, how is the vaccine ordering going to go with these providers? And so how you sort of turn that switch to your providers is going to be up to you by and large, but we'd like you to let us know how you plan to do that, and we'd like you to let us know as you roll on to that. And when Julie Orta talks about contact center, part of the reason is that we need to know how rapidly to staff up over at CDC in the contact center so that we can handle questions that your providers may have if they're actually ordering vaccine, and so we'd be able to have the proper level of staffing. And so we're looking at sort of three identical waves in here, so some big dates, you know, October 1st, and then January 1st through March 31st, VacMan retires, and we are, you know, we all have kind of a common back office, and one of the things that the way Jeannie described that the back office from the grantee perspective and CDC's perspective that's going to be kind of fun is that when, for the first time I think ever, when you know, right now you don't actually have the ability to check your account balances, but if you did have the ability to check your account balances and CDC had your ability to check your account balances, right now we might not come up with the same number. With this system, we will. I think you're going to be very, very happy with what you have with in your back office, and you will have some time to get used to that. You'll have more time, but we do want you to start that work and complete largely that work of enrolling your providers. My sense is that once I think the providers are not going to have a horrible time ordering vaccine on the internet. I mean, people order things on the internet all the time, and I think that probably word of mouth in terms of, you know, gee, it's not that hard to do. I like it better than having to fax the order into the state and having the state have to key the orders, you know, manually into a system. Do it. You can still do that, but I think after a while you're not going to want to do that. You're going to want to take the value out of this system and allow the providers to order, because you still have complete oversight and control of every one of those orders, no matter whether they come in through the registry, whether they come in through the providers, and I think that's going to be a nice capability. So I think I've covered all the different colors in here and all the different this and that and the title and 20. This is 2010 through 2011, and we'll have plenty of chances to talk more about it later. But I do want to say one other thing, though, and that is there's been a huge amount of effort going into helping to make this thing work right for you all. And this week, I know Jeannie and a number of people were answering oodles of questions from Tom and his group, and these are you know, questions that we want to make sure that we get it right. And as a consequence, Jeannie spent pretty much the whole week working on this. And she missed that tribute that Anne made for her. And so I think we should, about all the distribution effort for H1N1, Anne had a very nice spot in the opening plenary with Secretary Sebelius, and it was for her. And so I think we should acknowledge some of
Hi, everybody. To follow up on what Lance was just mentioning around the contact center, I want to give you a quick overview of what that is, what that means for you, and what is in it for you. So you can imagine if you're ever ordering anything online, a book, a sweater, an airline ticket, and you're on the internet and you get this error message, it would be nice if you could call somebody. And that is exactly what has happened, what does occur in the real world, and we have to replicate that. Otherwise, if you so desire, we can save our dollars, and your providers who get an error message, they can just call you directly. Does that sound good? So what we have to do is, and what we want to do is provide outstanding customer support for anybody whose orders come through VTRAX, basically everybody. All public sector vaccine orders are going to come through VTRAX. Whether they come through a provider going directly into VTRAX and placing that order, or the provider puts the order into the registry and then it interfaces with VTRAX, or you, as you're gradually rolling out VTRAX to your providers, are putting orders into VTRAX on behalf of your providers for some period of time, we absolutely need to provide outstanding customer support to answer any questions around those orders as they flow through the system. So we are going to have this centralized customer operation, since the online ordering system itself is a centralized system. Our support service, of course, will also be centralized. Through this, we will provide timely, consistent, and accurate information. And we already are demonstrating that capacity as we have a vendor selected. It's the same vendor that supports CDC Info. It's Vangen Incorporated. And they are currently supporting the help desk for our VPOP providers. So now why, I think we've already covered this and it's intuitive, but just to go on the record, we need to provide customer support. We would not be doing our jobs if we left you and your providers hanging as this online ordering system has its many features. So we need to provide timely, consistent, and accurate information to all stakeholders in VTRAX. And by centralizing this type of support, we ensure consistency in our message, we ensure quality, we have a centralized location for reporting, and we can ensure that we are meeting your needs and your provider's needs. And of course, when VACMAN shuts down and VPOP shuts down as those providers roll onto full VTRAX, there will be no more VACMAN, and of course, we will no longer need the VACMAN help desk or the VPOP help desk. It will all become our full contact center. So let's talk a little bit about the difference between what the help desk for VPOP offers versus what our full contact center will offer for full VTRAX. The help desk for VPOP went live in May 2009 because that's when VPOP went live. And likewise, our contact center will need to go live as soon as full VTRAX goes live, scheduled for October of this year. The hours of service will be the same for both, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. With VPOP, the channels for reaching an agent at the help desk were phone and email, and it will be that way in full VTRAX with the added item of fax. We don't anticipate that users are going to want to reach the contact center via fax, but we are opening that opportunity. Our customers for VPOP are the providers and the pilot, keeping in mind that VPOP is intended to test the online ordering functionality, getting providers used to ordering public sector vaccine directly online. That was our population that is continuing to contact the help desk. When full VTRAX goes live, we will have providers, grantees, and CDC all as stakeholders in the use of full VTRAX, and so our contact center needs to be able to support all these populations. With VPOP, the kinds of questions that the help desk answers are around technical support in using the online application. Because of its simplicity in what it is trying to achieve, it is simply a place for providers to practice putting orders, real live orders, online. It's a one-way street, basically, so the only types of questions that can make sense to come to this help desk are around navigating through the screens. I have a concern because I'm trying to click on this and it's not working, or I'm looking for this vaccine and I can't find it. So it's all about using the application. By the time we roll out full VTRAX, the questions will be greatly expanded because of it, the dynamic nature of full VTRAX. VTRAX will be that one-stop shop that tracks an order from the time an order is in or trying to get into the system all the way through to the delivery. All that information will be visible. And so our contact center will need to be able to support questions around the use of the application, of course, as well as ordering assistance, navigating through a lot more screens that will be in existence with full V-Tracks. Questions around fulfillment. By fulfillment, we mean that period of time from after the provider or whoever is entering that order into the system clicks submit until the vaccine arrives. Order status inquiries. Oops, I already submitted this, but I forgot this vaccine, or I think I may have ordered too many of that vaccine. What do I do? So kinds of questions around waiting up until the point that the package arrives at the door. And then after that vaccine package does arrive, if there's some question around the package itself, the kinds of questions that you as the project points of contact are currently getting, you will in many cases still need to continue to get them, especially if they require grantee decision making. But that no value add kinds of questions that could be deferred to the contact center to work with us at CDC on your behalf, we may be able to handle. And one example of that would be in the event that there's a picking error. The packing slip says that 20 doses were supposed to be in the box. In the box, there are only 10 doses. So if it's an error on the picking side, instead of you having to deal with that kind of call and taking your time away from core public health functions, our contact center may be able to work on your behalf, and of course keep you in the loop on every step of the way until that issue is resolved. So what's in it for you? As grantees, we would like to see that over time you're not taking as many no value add calls. You can rely on us to do that kind of work and our contact center to do that kind of work, ideally increasing your time for more core public health functions, through the reporting capabilities that will come out of our call tickets. We will be able to let you know this is how many calls or emails, whatever the contact channel is, this is how many contacts came for your jurisdiction, and here's how they were handled. And it may identify educational opportunities, especially if you have a particular provider that is calling multiple times, even maybe for the same issue. As providers, it makes sense for us to ensure that we provide outstanding customer support and easy access, timely access. And for CDC, as the agency over all this, we need to ensure quality, and we will have visibility into reporting to assess that. So I would say the biggest piece of this puzzle has been ensuring that we're meeting your needs. And we have been diligent not to work in a vacuum. We all know this system is only going to be successful if you have buy-in into the system itself and the support that we provide all the way out to your provider level. So who are the users of public sector vaccine? Grantees, providers, and CDC. How have we been getting input from grantees? A very critical partner, the GAC, Contact Center Planning Work Group. Nathan is going to talk about the GAC at large, but for this purpose, I wanted to acknowledge that we have 10 grantees still currently on board with us as part of this work group called the Contact Center Planning Work Group. They're big, they're small, they're urban, they're rural, and they're all over the country. And when our contact center goes live and is wildly successful, you can thank your peers. And if we had more time, I would acknowledge each of the members and let you know exactly who they are. I'm looking at quite a few of you already. But you've been with us through the thick and thin, through H1N1, before and after, and we're back on track with these monthly calls, and they're productive. We also have CDC on those calls, and of course our core team, which is made up of contractors. So Joe McDowell, I'm sorry I didn't introduce you right away. He's the IT lead for Contact Center. I'm the program side of the house, and so it's been a critical partnership. We have other subject matter experts from the field and from experience in Contact Center coming to this room. So we have, I would argue, a really good group that has been representing you and will continue to represent you. Providers have been represented through the VPOP and the PAC, the Provider Advisory Committee, which is another aspect of VPOP. And CDC, of course, a critical component to ensuring successful use of V-Tracks, so we've been making sure to work very closely with our counterparts at CDC. major activity with the contact center planning work group and with CDC has been to try to identify what's the universe of questions that will come to the contact center. And we probably won't ever get the full universe. We're doing the best we can. We've worked with all of you. Many of you saw a survey immediately after the NIC last year asking you to take a look at the questions that your peers had come up with to date and build from that. And then we take each and every one in tremendous detail and decide, well, this case really needs to be referred to the grantee. Our contact center can't be involved in something like that. That requires a grantee decision, or that's unique to how a grantee might handle that. We need to transfer that one. But this issue, we really think we can take that load off you, and here's how we'll handle it. So we've been working through every scenario and every flavor that we can think of to identify how in-scope questions will be handled and how we will make sure to keep you in the loop on anything that we do handle, because we do value that you own those relationships with your providers, and we are not going to strip that relationship. For out-of-scope questions, and there are quite a few of them, we are identifying those, and for the most part, the point of contact for out-of-scope questions will be you, the grantee, with a single exception of a few that, for example, if it's a triggered temperature monitor, your providers ought to be calling that McKesson line within that two-hour window. So there is a, you know, our contact center agents are going to be fully trained to understand when something's out of scope, who exactly does it need to go to. And so a major activity that we're working on right now and that is directly tied to the rollout schedule is estimating vendor staffing and training needs. So our contact center right now, it's the help desk for VPOP, and the scope of questions they have is limited, and let's just say the phones don't exactly ring off the hook, which is a good problem to have. But when full VTRACS goes live, there's going to be a whole lot more questions, and with that, a whole lot more training, and we need to know, what is it really going to take to make sure they're fully capable, they understand the questions, they know exactly where to send those questions, we build their databases accordingly, and work collaboratively with Vangent. So far, it's been wildly successful working with Vangent, and we're confident that will stay. You will see in the pretty near future an email going out to all of you asking you to take a look at a glossary of terms that you, your peers, have put together thus far. Barbara Lehman has spearheaded that effort to try to think of, you know, what are some of the terms like health department? Some of you call it a local health department. Some of you call it local public health. Some of you call it county health department. There are different terms that mean the same thing. Likewise, there's the same term that means different things, like PHA means something different in Chicago than it does to CDC. So we want to make sure that our contact center agents understand the language that all of us speak. We all speak 64 flavors of the same language. And so our folks have taken a stab at developing a comprehensive training tool glossary to teach this language to the contact center agents. And you'll be seeing that tool fairly soon, I would say within the next several weeks. And so that's what we're working on. We need to know how to staff our contact center and how to make sure they're fully competent upon go live. And with that, I will turn this over to Nathan, who will speak about the Grantee Advisory Committee. Thanks.
Well, good afternoon. I have the privilege of leading the Grantee Advisory Committee. There are a lot of you here that are on that committee. There are about 30 grantees represented in the Grantee Advisory Committee. So for those of you who are involved, thank you for being involved in that group. I'm going to just give just two short slides describing the role of the GAC over the next few months as we transition to VTRACS. It by no means will provide a summary of all the work that's been done. A lot of work has been done. But again, just briefly summarize the role of the next few months. And I should say, too, there are two grantee co-leads for this, Jan Hicks-Thompson from Washington and Gary Rinaldi from New York, who have been very helpful as well in this on this committee. So at its core, the Grantee Advisory Committee really has always existed at its core to provide feedback on VTRACS to CDC. It's really your official communication channel back to CDC. And so again, this first bullet acts as a communication channel between CDC and grantees. Over the next few months, this next bullet will be especially important, supporting your and provider organizational change management needs. So we have started an OCM organizational change management and training work group, and as the email said that went out, that really will be a critical group over the next few months. And along with that, this group helps to identify grantee and provider training needs, develops and monitors grantee and provider communication needs. Those things, again, will happen as a part of this OCM and training team. And then also providing input into the future development of a VTRACS user group. As VTRACS is rolled out, there will be a user group that is formed, again, an official way to receive feedback on how VTRACS is working and what should change and what shouldn't change for release 2 and release 3. And so the grantee advisory committee will provide some input on what that group should look like and perhaps who should make it up. Also providing input into a frequently asked questions document that I'm consistently updating. We're gathering questions and providing answers to that. So I think not just for the sake of providing answers, but also helping us to gauge what are your concerns. There are currently two work groups. There have been many more. Last summer there were quite a few that we started and ended, but there are two currently. This top one has just begun, the Organizational Change Management and Training Group, focused on grantee and provider training, communication, and generally preparing you and your providers for this transition. The GAC lead for that is Jan Hicks Thompson. There's also, as Julie pointed out, the Contact Center Planning Work Group, which is one of the very first groups out of the Grantee Advisory Committee to start quite a while ago now, and that group has been really a critical group in deciding what this Contact Center should look like. So making recommendations to CDC on how various vaccine order-related issues and questions should be handled, and I know they've provided really valuable information there. That's really all I have on that update. So I'll give it over to Warren next.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Warren Williams, and I get the pleasure of chatting with you all a little bit about we save the best for last, so that's the part about the IIS's connecting into this. I just wanted to give a couple updates on kind of what we know and some news about the pilots that we hope to also be able to integrate into this. First, a couple terms. We use the term EXIS as any kind of general reference to how that will connect into VTRACS. Typically, there are going to be three types of systems that this will involve: the immunization registry and the immunization information system, basically synonymous. But we also may involve some PIC systems that are out there in the grantee world, and those may also be types of systems that will connect into this system. So we just generally refer to any of these systems that are external to CDC as they will connect into VTRACS. The ultimate vision here is for the EXIS and the VTRACS interface to be to seamlessly integrate from the grantees' provider tools into this system. So we want that eventually to include everything that the provider encounter is involved with, so anywhere from the master data to the order data to the status. However, future releases with this will be able to hopefully take advantage of some technologies to make this happen. However, for release one that we're going to start off testing and working with in the fall will be a fairly simple order interface between the EXIS and VTRACS. So ultimately, we do want to sort of get to this point where that seamless integration is there, but we have to sort of, anytime you take on a big project like this, you have to take steps in order to get there, and so this is going to be one of the steps that we take and are hopeful that we will learn as we go forth with this. This slide here is just I know it's a little messy, but I just want to point out some of the confusion that exists here, and really what we want to do with phase one is really take advantage of basically what happens now with these EXIS systems and take the file that kind of can go into VACMAN and use something very similar to that for the transfer into Vitrix. So this sort of just gives a general architecture lay of all the various different systems, a lot of them on the back end, but we do want to kind of focus in on this part right here and make that order entry part work as seamless as we can into the new Vitrix world. So in order to sort of figure out how we could go forth with this, there was a survey conducted July of last year, because, you know, last July we didn't have anything else to plan for. But anyhow, there's a lot of interest and capacity to do this, and we really want to take advantage of this. A lot of grantees are already have the capacity to place orders. A lot of them are doing it a couple of different ways, as far as a dynamic link exchange or a file transfer type of mechanism. So we really want to try and work with that as best as we can to be able to integrate those techniques into reporting this order as seamlessly as possible. Brad said that the VPOP pilots did a lot of bleeding work to kind of figure out how this is going to work for those pilot sites. I would also like to acknowledge that we think that both Washington and Michigan will be participating with us in this, and I've spoken with both of them here this week, and I think there may be some bleeding edge work that we can get done and figured out for this so that the rest of us can sort of integrate this in with the rest of our work. So Therese and Jan, I know we'll be working a lot over the next couple of months to make this happen. A couple of things that we're going to have to do is the file format will need to be analyzed and mapped to the SAP application. My colleague Tim Mawinney, who's down and also here in the front, has been working with SAP to look at that. We're going to have to get that file layout reviewed and distributed and make sure it sort of matches what folks are already working on. We also need to sort of look on the transport protocols and make sure we can get that figured out, and we're having some conversations on how to do that. And then another thing we also want to start planning for is looking at future technologies and other avenues that we can pursue here to make these transfers work a little more seamless. We don't want to just stop with kind of a batch processing mode if we can get to take advantage of some more modern technologies that we can make that interface with the providers work even better for these EXIS sites. So I think some other future release options and making sure that those are looked at as we sort of go forth with future release 2 or whatever is something we want to sort of stay on top of now, so we're not blocking ourselves into a limited solution in the first days. So we're really looking forward to working with Washington and Michigan on this, and I hope they're looking forward to this also. They're still smiling at me, so I guess I'll take that as a good sign. And we'll be starting to communicate a little bit more about this. I'd like to be able to create some lesson learned type documents of what to do and what to think about as we go forward with making this happen. So I think, you know, now that the NIC is over with, we'll be able to sort of engage a little bit more on this. And so it was just up until last week that I think we've got a good pulse that we'll be able to do this with these two sites. So we're really looking forward to it. I think that's about all I have. So I guess I'll turn it back over to Brad, and you can do the Q&A. Thanks.
Thanks, Warren. Before we get into the Q&A, I have a couple more slides to go through that'll help you understand as grantees what you need to do to get ready. And then Angela wants to make a few comments as well. So this layout may look familiar to some of you. This, what we are envisioning to help get grantees ready to transition to full VTRAX is use of the modules like we use for centralized distribution. And the content of these modules are still in development, but what we think that we're going to have a need for is like kickoff and readiness, where we would do a change readiness a survey and stakeholder interviews, things like that, just to fully understand where everybody is in the process and where we need to target resources and things like that. Communications, can't say enough about that. We will have some communication tools developed that will help you communicate with your providers and other stakeholders. Process overview, role definition and mapping, just so you can understand and your staff can understand how their daily lives will differ when they start using V-Tracks and what types of skill sets you need to have involved, things like that. Testing is in blue, as you can see, because we will be hopefully soliciting grantee representatives to help us in the testing of V-Tracks before it goes live. Some of the others, data cleanup and conversion of existing data, provider readiness, training, technical setup, and then the pre-go live transition activities. So we, as we get these developed, we will start getting information out to you based on a timeline something like this. We think that we would need to start the module work somewhere around 6 months prior to when you go live. So if we forget about the pilot grantees right now and think about the other 60 or so, if you were going live in January, we would start this process with you sometime around July or late June, something like that, just to give you enough time. And the green indicates a low level of effort as far as how much work you need to do to complete each one of these. The length of the bar shows, you know, when it starts and ends, and as you can see, communications is something that we hope that you do throughout the entire process so that your providers are ready when it comes time for them to transition as well. Yellow is medium level of effort, and red is high level of effort, and for these modules, that would include the testing part of that for those that would be involved in testing. Training, something that everybody will be involved in, and we'll have training set up much like we did for VPOP, and what that was a train-the-trainer type scenario. We more than likely will not be able to make site visits to every place to do face-to-face training, but we'll be able to take advantage of technology such as webinars and things like that to provide you with the tools to then in turn provide to your providers at whatever rate you decide to bring them on board. And then the pre-go live activities, that's making sure that everything is ready to go, the last part of that. And one thing I will point out about the training, that we would start probably about a month before you go live, because you do it too early, you tend to lose that knowledge that you have gained, but it stays fresh if it's within that month of going live. So some of the things that you can start thinking about doing right now for all grantees, begin data cleanup efforts. Warren alluded a little bit to that, and we will be providing you more directions as we know more what that will involve. Participation in any of the GAC work groups that Nathan discussed. And also, as you know, Lance was showing the color changes on the slide, the schedule, you need to start thinking about how aggressively you want to bring on your providers after you go live, with that end goal in mind of having 85% of them on board by that target date. For the pilot grantees specifically, we will be kicking off pretty soon the first module, because October is not too far away. And so we're going to have that kickoff meeting as a conference call. And then, you know, we will be able to make some site visits, hopefully, to give them some training to get them ready to go. And they will, too, need to begin communicating activities with their providers, just to kind of, you know, let them know this is coming. And then the part of it that's a little different for provider transition for the VPOP grantees is that they have a certain number of providers that are already participating. But, you know, when they go live around the first part of October, we're making the assumption that those that they've been working with would go live also, but the balance of those providers that are not currently using that technology will have to be transitioned sometime after January 1st. So they need to be thinking about how they want to handle that as well. But that gives you an idea anyway of what's to come in the very near future for all of us. And I'll turn this over to Angela to make some comments before we do go into the questions themselves.
Just real quickly, you know, centralized distribution was truly a huge effort, but this is truly an enormous effort as well. And what I would like to do is just ask, if you're a member on any of the VTRAX teams, will you please stand? I just want you to see that how many people are actually engaged in this effort. We have Lisa, Joe, Marshall Stukes. Marshall is our in-house SAP expert. We actually have the OCM, the marketing team. And this is just a small number. Julie Orta, you have Gary Urquhart. There is a number of people that are truly engaged in this effort. And only you heard from a few of them today, but I did want to at least to recognize the others that are here today, because it is really truly taking a village to raise this system. This is truly an enormous effort that once it's implemented, we're going to truly be proud of. We will have a system that we can be proud of that will truly evolutionize how we do our vaccine ordering and completing that life cycle for vaccine management. That's all I had to say. So with that, Brad, you want to start the Q&A?
Thank you, Angela. If we could have the speakers come back up here, that'll be the easiest way to manage that, I think. We have enough seats for everybody. And if there are any questions, as you can see here, we have like Joe McDowell, Lisa Galloway, Marshall Stukes, Nabil Khan, folks that stood up, didn't give a presentation, but are heavily involved as subject matter experts. And if there are any questions that would be directed their way, they can either go to the mic there or up to one of these. Chris, if you can hang on just a second, we did ask, you can stay there, but I just wanted to cover some of the questions that were submitted prior to the conference real quick. Amy Matroka from New York City had sent in a question saying, I would like to request that details be provided on the interface between VTRAX and immunization information systems. I hope that Warren's presentation addressed that, and I don't know if Amy's in the audience. Does that satisfy you, or is there anything additional that you were?
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
We think so, too.
Conference is over now. Can we end on that note?
Nicely enough, this conference is being recorded, and it'll be and it will be on the internet. This is true. So,
I'll have to pass that
will
on to my mother. Thanks.
Yeah. The second question was: please inform us of the information that will be required for vaccine orders. That was an unknown requester, so I don't know if anybody wants to own up to that one. The information required by VTRAX should be similar to what is required when entering VACMAN orders. Any of the IT folks want to elaborate on that any more than that response?
That's it.
And Greg Reed from Maryland asks, will VTRAX allow business rules to be established based on our state's dose replacement inventory model? And Lance is going to address that.
Hey, Greg. Hey, Greg. So in your registry, when you have orders placed, you have business rules that you like to use in order to decide whether this order is okay or needs to be flagged for review, correct?
Correct.
And VTRAX is going to have business rules that will help decide whether this order needs to be flagged or correct. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to think about having every registry in the country have exactly the same business rules as VTRAX. So I think that very likely we'll have situations where you may pass an order through the registry that you say this is okay, and a VTRAX business rule flags that for your review. And so then it would be asking you to review that order. Does that make sense? Because I think if we, all right, it makes sense, but you don't like it? Or it just doesn't make any sense.
I guess you just need to know more about how the business rule is going to be established, how does each individual grantee say these are business rules that are most critical for me, that I need to make sure that it's incorporated into the system.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And that's really kind of beyond the level of what we're going to be able to go through today to understand is how much individual flexibility there'll be with the business rules. One of the things that we're trying very hard to do in the program at the CDC level is to be able to standardize what is an acceptable amount of VFC vaccine based on VFC eligibility criteria, the provider annual need. And this is a longer term strategy that we'll be asking VTRACS to support initially so that we can test and use pilot studies. So these business rules will be evolving. They're also part of the stewardship of the Vaccines for Children program that we'll want to have. But you may very well have a list of providers in your, you know, in Maryland that you say, you know, we need to put them on a shorter list than what we, you know, and, you know, or there's, we have problems with these providers or something like that, where you're going to want to restrict their ordering. You can do that. But we certainly wouldn't want to make, you know, individual restrictions like that be something that was national policy. And so I think there's always going to be the cases if you're ordering through the registry where you may have a rule that'll pass an order, that we may have a rule that will say we would like you to review that order.
So Greg, in other words, stay tuned. Once we complete the configuration, we will provide you with more details regarding that setup. But right now, it has not been completed.
Okay. All right.
Lance, do you have something?
No, see, those were the three submitted questions, and then...
Yeah, we'll open it up for others.
So now we're starting with only easy questions and then moving up to...
They are easy.
The hard
questions.
Ones have started after 4 o'clock, I think.
These were ones about... just a wish list, I think. Would we still be able, as a state or grantee, be able to use the login of VTRACS as a bulletin board? So the state of Colorado puts up a message that all the people see when they log in, like benchmarking is due this month, don't forget. It doesn't help the people that don't order every month, but it's another redundant system where we use for advertising and putting up bulletins and things.
Again, we're not going to be able to give you details to probably any of the questions you have, but there are capabilities for grantees to communicate with providers within the system, as well as things that you'll continue to do outside the system.
I thought I'd seen it somewhere, just hadn't seen recently. The other was, will accountability still be customized by state, or is there going to be a standard?
So thank you for asking that question. Actually, within VTRACS, accountability, specifically submission of doses administered data, will be standardized like it is in VACMAN, recognizing that in the pilot we did customize that, but that, and I think that the pilot grantees have heard since the beginning of the pilot, but if they haven't, that was a feature of the pilot that we were not going to make a feature of full VTRACS.
Laurel?
I'm sure I know the answer to the first one, but will these slides be available for us later? If you'd said anything but yes, and I don't think there was any secret data you didn't want us to know.
No, Suzanne Johnson de Leon was able to make this an official part of the conference, and so this session and the slides from the session, the slides and the voice will be available on the internet, and I think that the time period for the NIC is 2 weeks afterwards, but we can send you the slides for this presentation. I'm sure we can get those sent out to you all today, and we'd probably be able to beat them all the way to Alaska, I would imagine.
I bet you will.
But that's really great.
I was thinking that it was too bad this wasn't part of that where you can go in and look at them later, so that's really good news. I have a question, but first I want to make a comment that I'm not trying to be argumentative here. I promise I'm not, and you don't even have to respond right now. This is a suggestion, though. I've still, after all this time that we've talked about this, I think there's a lot that VMBIP has done, and really positive things, and H1N1 proved that, and what I think VTRACS is going to do. But it is still nagging at me that we've got slides that say internal efficiencies, that one of them is improved inventory management results in enhanced visibility, which it absolutely does, and significant savings, which I still doubt And, you know, I just think let's call it like it is and quit saying it's saving lots and lots of money, unless we're willing to put up something that says, and here's how much money's been saved. I think it's a good thing, but it's one of those you get what you pay for things. And if we've made improvements, then I still find it difficult to think that this is saving money. And if I'm wrong, I'd love for you to show me a lot of data that proves that. And you don't have to comment. It was just a statement. So here's my question. I'm not sure. First of all, I think some states, certainly Alaska, have changed from what we would have answered in July, even to what we would answer now, about the readiness of our registry to do different things. So could you clarify for me, you've got the four pilots and then the two with the external systems that are going to come online October 1. The last time I remember us talking about what was going to be in release one, wasn't going to have anything to do with registry. So this is actually really good to see that we've got this next step that's going on here. So my question is, if you are a state that really is going to be using your registry for this, where do you fall in group one, group two, group three, and exactly what will you be able to do with release one as we're implementing this?
Well, I think the release one part, I don't know about the fall in, where that will go. I can't answer that, but the other part of your question about what release one will be able to do, I think it'll be very similar to what sort of happens now with the ability to transfer an electronic file into VACMAN now. So we're going to try and map that consistency as much as possible from your external system so that file layout will hopefully be very similar to what people are already doing now, and that so that order can go into, similar to how you would dump it into VACMAN, you would be able to turn it into the VTREC system. So kind of a one-way feed with release one.
You know, we will have a release two.
I don't.
And we are just starting to even look at gathering functionality for that release. However, you know, we're going to have to utilize the system before we can truly refine what additional things we really want in the future.
Go ahead.
Hi, Brad. Joni Reynolds from Colorado. And I appreciate the update in regards to the identity proofing, because I hadn't gotten that information yet. But in Colorado, that's been a big challenge for us in the pilot, and I know you indicated that in your presentation. And I was just wondering, as we transition into full VTRACs, if there will be an opportunity for us to adjust our identity proofing so that we can enroll providers prior to the VTRACs transition?
Sure. Yeah. I may be speaking out of turn here, but I think we feel comfortable that this has been pretty much blessed, Nabil, except for a signature on the dotted line.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And as soon as we have that, you could start immediately with any providers that you would want to transition prior to your formal transition.
Great. That's great news. And Jerry,
just to add on to that, I mean, there are some things that you'll have to do. For example, your VFC enrollment form, you'd want to update that, you know, the one that you use every year. I think that'll be an important step. And then you'll want to be able to figure out how to get the names, you know, so ABC Pediatrics lead provider is going to give you the names of the two individuals or three individuals that are going to order vaccine on behalf of ABC Pediatrics. You want to be able to work out the arrangements, how you get those names and to send them in. So one of the advantages of doing what you're suggesting is that we'll be able to troubleshoot and sort of test out and pilot the newer system. And so I think that your question is very, very germane. It'll help us improve it before March 31st or April, you know, beginning of April next year, when a lot of providers will be rolling onto the system. And so again, your pilot status will help the other providers as well, even on a more simplified system.
And one of the things we're looking at as a possibility is on that enrollment form, where you have to list the other physicians in the office, may be able to make it an adjustment so that it also lists the VTRAX users in that office with their their ID or their email address or something like that. But you know, we're still trying to finalize the language that'll go on to the enrollment form and how we capture all of that.
Sounds great. And we just sent in our newly revised provider enrollment form to Nancy Fenlon this week to ask for her review and approval. So the timing is perfect because we're in the process of updating that for Colorado. The final question I had was in relation to the process for the pilot evaluation before the full VTRAX rollout. So how will that process work? I know we roll on in Colorado later this year and the others roll on the beginning of next year, but what will that evaluation process look like between the pilots and the full rollout?
Well, one of the things you probably noticed is that it happens at midnight on December 31st. And so the ball will be coming down in New York City and we'll get a thumbs up or a thumbs down. No, I think Joni, it's a fair question. It's certainly a good question. I think what we're looking at is 3 months worth of experience in high volume, lots of orders, a lot of activity. We're gonna be in constant contact with you. And so when something, when or if something's not working, we're gonna hear about it and we're gonna have to make a collective decision. Is there a problem with this that's gonna preclude rolling on everybody else? Part of the reason for having an aggressive roll-on strategy is kind of our very basic gut feeling is that once you as the pilots, the six pilots, have access to a system that's gonna be a lot better than what we have right now, we don't really wanna delay everybody else's access to a system that's gonna be a lot better. If there's some showstoppers in that 3 month period of time, it's gonna be a showstopper for everybody, including you all, and we would end up having to revert back to NIPVAC and VACMAN. We don't anticipate that that's gonna be the case, but I think that we're gonna be on the phone with you an awful lot during that pilot phase to make sure that it's okay and that we're totally comfortable going forward. But it's not like there's an evaluation, there's a pause and a big evaluation and then a resumption. I think that the system testing that's gonna be vitally important to make sure that the internal workings of the system are all correct, that the dollars add properly and the doses add and decrement properly will be done way in advance of that. The user acceptability testing is gonna be done in advance of rolling on there. So there'll be a lot of testing and evaluation before it's even implemented in here. And then if there are problems when we're up and running or when you're up and running, you're gonna let us know and we'll see if there's something that is a big problem or something that is that we need to deal with. I think your question is fair. I mean, what we're not doing is stopping for 4 months and taking a look and evaluating. I mean, I think that this is gonna be a high intensity three-month period of time.
There. Hi, Lance. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Brad, can you go to Lance's slide with the rollout? Because I just have a scenario I'm thinking of with registries, and this is on Laurel's question. You have the rollout for the 3 months to get everybody onto VTRAX, and then you have your provider implementation. But in those months, you're going to have registries that are just building their e-ordering. So they're going to be rolling out ordering through the registry. So you really wouldn't want them to put private providers on VTRAX too, because you see what I mean? We have a problem with two systems.
Right. I mean, there's one of the things to say about this is before a grantee is able to roll onto VTRAX, all of the grantee's data about all of the grantee's providers has to be clean and in VTRAX and up and running and ready to go and there. So all of the provider data, the provider ID numbers, the ship to addresses, all of this information will have to be on there. The registry grantees don't actually have to enroll the provider into VTRAX.
That's right. But I'm thinking front end, the web interface. Yeah, what I'm thinking is VTRAX has a web interface for provider usage, and so does the registry. So during your planning here, you're going to have states who may have not implemented their e-ordering in their registry, and they may not until January 2012, but they wouldn't want to put providers on a system they're going to turn them off on. Do you see what I mean? You can't put them on VTRAX for 6 months and then move to your registry. So that will impact your numbers of providers trained on your system because they're waiting to go through the registry. Do you see what I mean? Registry development and VTRAX development on the same track.
Right. So I think what you're saying is if there's a grantee who has a system they think is going to go live sort of
later,
you know, parallel. November of, of 11.
Yeah.
What do they do? Because they don't want to enroll providers onto VTRAX and then switch them. And that's a really, we agree. And I don't think this reflects grantees who are in the situation where we want to do an ordering system, but we don't have an ordering system yet that we're doing. And I agree that the schematic of this doesn't actually take that scenario into account. And we want to be able to work with states that are where their registries are not at the point of ordering yet, but will be, because it's true, getting providers involved in two different systems does not make sense.
Yeah, and that message has to be clear to them so they're not pushing their providers on to VTRAX and six months later turning them off VTRAX,
you
putting them on the registry.
Let me jump in also here, please. You've just brought up a very good question, and we're going to have to look at unique situations such as that, and then we will have to work with you so then that we can plan out the best way ahead for your particular situation if you're there, as well as others. Because, you know, throughout this rollout, there are going to be some very unique situations we will come across, and you're presenting a very good question. What we'll have to do is work with you and work out the plan that's best for your particular situation.
Well, and I think, Brad, the slide that you had about the getting ready activities and the modules, and it talks about that stakeholder analysis.
Right.
It might be good to mention how that'll, because that would be the place that this sort of situation and other situations, we could know about them, understand them, and then strategize.
But yeah, exactly. As we work those modules with you and we get to that stakeholder assessment piece of that, that's when we kind of figure out on our end what your needs are, and that helps us develop plans to address those different scenarios that are encountered as we go through. And that also helps us figure out how we place 60 grantees in these three groups. That hasn't yet to be decided. And, you know, it's, you know, everything's wide open right now. Some of it will involve desire, because I'm sure there'll be some that want to go early, some that want to wait.
So we'll try
to accommodate that the best we can. But if we're trying to do 20 at a time and 40 people say they want to go last, well, obviously we can't accommodate that. So we would have to factor some other things in as well.
Or the other way around.
Yeah,
and it's to your report to Ann. You know, if it looks like your participation in VTRAX is slow at the provider level using the front end, she's going to question you, and the answer is, well, the registry's developing that capability, and the providers will go through there. So they wouldn't count in these numbers. Do you see what I mean? Your numbers are going to be flawed.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
That's true. And one more thing. After you roll out, and let's say the end of 2012, a registry develops or buys a new registry, off-the-shelf registry, a lot of them are doing that, that has ordering capabilities, can they, even though they have their providers on VTRAX, now, you know, during this time frame, they enhance their system to have e-ordering. Can they do that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then could they, you would be able to turn off the ordering functions for those providers on your side,
and they could move?
Yes.
The grantee will be able to do that.
That would be okay for the grantee to do
that. Control, yes.
If you don't love VTRAX so much that you wouldn't want to not do that.
Exactly right. But, you know, if they're buying, you know, you can see how they're enhancing their systems. And that's been a confusion out there because they're afraid that if they don't have it now, then they can't increase capacity in the registry because V-Tracks is where you have to be.
I mean, I think it's a good point also because you don't want to, if there's going to have to be a change in the registry to be able to get the right type of flat file out
exactly.
or a change in the provider community, you don't want to rush that just mm-hmm. to meet an arbitrary deadline.
Right.
But, you know, this is a system where the grantee has a lot of control.
Good. Thank you.
Claire.
This was really a great session. Thank you. I don't have a solution for this, but I felt compelled to come to the microphone to share what was going on in my mind when you guys were presenting, and that was the timeline of all of this change coming in the fall and that coinciding with the era vaccine money and really making an effort to make sure it's spent and out the door by the end of August, and moving to a significant number of states moving to 50% compliance visits in VFC. It's a lot of change coming at one time. And so I don't know if there's a way to look at which grantees are going to be impacted the most by those changes and trying to time it in that way. I'm just a little looking forward, just a little concerned about, you know, that at also at a time when, you know, this year they've got a reduction in 317. It's just, it's going to be a lot of time for grantees, for program managers who are leading this change to really push these out in an effective way. I just think it's something we should keep in mind, and I don't have a solution, but that we should look at.
I mean, Claire, it's a good point. Dan Hassenberger was talking to me about kind of the similar, stress and pressures that you're all facing. The ERA funds, as I said a couple days ago, I'm very confident that you guys are going to be successful and have this done by the end of the fiscal year by the roll-on. And so it is a lot of pressure on you. The increased number of site visits, I think that's something that, you know, there's additional work for some, not additional work for others. I think that the bottom line is that this is a very hardworking program, and the program managers are very hardworking program managers, and there really is a lot of work that's going to need to be done to get this done. I don't have presented a problem with no solution. I don't have a great, you know, a solution like we're going to get a whole lot of additional resources for this. If we do get additional resources, that'll be great. I think one of the other challenges that people had talked about is, well, a lot of this will be, you know, be done, some of the training and all that will be done during influenza season, and that's a challenge. And I guess the only thing that I can think of is that the program managers have always managed to step up to meet these challenges, and we're going to work with you. I kind of, you know, picking off from what Angela said, is that, you know, we're going to work with you to try to make it, you know, so that we, you know, we're going through a lot together, but try to make it so that it can happen. But we really do need to get into a better system where your life is going to be a lot easier in terms of being able to manage your programs, knowing where the vaccine is, where the vaccine went, where your dollars are, where your dollars aren't, and how much you have. And I think that we're going to all be a lot happier on the other end of it. But you're right, it's going to be tough and stressful.
Bob?
First of all, I want to thank CDC for all the hard work I know that's gone into preparation of V-Tracks. I know that for probably 2 years, you've been more than that, working on some type of V-Track system and trying to pull that in place. And what I mostly appreciate is that we've been able to get involved with the GAC, and that including us in it, in the process. But I guess now the shoe falls a little, because I'm a little bit skeptical. I feel like we really had a lot of input into what V-Tracks was going to be. I felt like we started on reviewing design documents and requirements, and felt like we had a lot of input. And it's only just recently where I feel like now we're going to put out a V-Tracks, which I'm very glad about. We need to get that in place. But I feel like it's a real stripped down version. And I know that you don't know the specifics, but I feel like the input that we may have made at least from the calls that I've been on, a lot of the functionality got stripped out now so that we can get something out, and a little bit concerned about that. We all need a system that will work, and we are the end users along with you, and I hope that, that we can assure for that. And you don't have to comment on that, I guess, but my view, because I feel like I've dedicated quite a bit of time to it.
Maybe two short comments. One is that, I mean, we think you're going to be pleased with the system, and I think, you know, that the input has been very instrumental in terms of helping to shape what's going to be in the system. And we have to remember that there are certain core functionalities that need to be done, that have to be done, and they will be in the system. I think it was a nice step forward. We weren't sure whether we were going to have the registry interfaces on in the first release, and that's great. We weren't sure whether we were going to have VOFA on in the first release, and it's great that, that it's in the requirements, it's in there. So what you're going to end up having is a, is for the first time a unified system with those three key programs not interacting through, you know, through flat files and databases in asynchronous time. You're going to have something that's a unified system that I think you're going to be happy with. The other is that we've been, you know, over the years started to learn a lot the difference between customization and configuration. And customization is actually getting in and changing code in a system that would end up haunting this program for a long period of time. And so any customization of code would have to be done in pretty darn unusual circumstances. But configuration, I think what we're going to find out is how configurable all of this is. And the configurations are going to be sort of the look and feel of what you'll be able to see with this program. So I don't think that you're going to be disappointed about it.
I hope not. I'm glad. The one comment I would make to the configuration and the way that it works, I agree 100% that you don't want to make too many changes. But I know in my work with registries and other software and trying to get that implemented, it's the end user that makes the difference, and it has to make the difference. If it's not usable to the end user, it's not usable, and it makes it difficult to use. I've experienced the other end of it, where we haven't done that and put it out in other situations, and it's been very difficult. So.
Bob, I would just like to also add on to what Lance is saying. If there are things, too, that you feel that we don't get in release one, make sure you use the GAC as well as other avenues to make your request known so that we can catalog those things so as we move forward, because you have to start somewhere. So we've tried to at least capture the critical components, which Lance mentioned. But if there are other things, as we move forward and look forward to future releases, make sure you make your request known so we can categorize those things. So then as we plan for the future releases, we will have that. And we can be a part of our planning so we can look at those type things.
And I appreciate that. And it actually steps right into the next thing that I'd like to touch on. And that's that flat file electronic interface. I think we did volunteer to go first, and I think that there's a lot of advantages to that. Hopefully we'll get some, be able to make a system that'll work for everybody. I'm concerned about the limitations of it, and hope that you would consider maybe the expansion of it, because currently it's just going to accept an order, and it is only one way, it isn't two way. Along with the order, really other information needs to accompany that. Things like operational hours of a clinic, addresses of the clinic that change frequently. And if those aren't included, then we're, again, running a dual system. We have to make those updates manually to the VTRAX system as opposed to being able to just electronically transfer them to VTRAX. And so every time you want to place an order, you've got to go and make a change first or find out if there's a change. It really is quite cumbersome, so I'm hoping that that could be considered to make this transition much, much easier. So thank you.
Thanks. Jan.
I actually have a question that's on a little different line of VTRAX. And as we were talking today about the replacement of the VOFA and the legacy systems, I really hope that we can pay some close attention and provide a lot of details to grantees that are in charge of that area of the program as well. What is it going to look like? How is it going to work? What are the expectations, the requirements, et cetera? I think that's the foundation that really the vaccine program is built on, how we manage the front end with the projections and reconciliation of budget and vaccine doses. So I just want to put that out there. And
And I think that's one of the things that it's going to make this really challenging, because this is an aggressive rollout schedule. I'm actually glad to see a schedule. Happy to have participated with a lot of my colleagues across the nation in providing the input through the advisory committee through ERA and AIM, and I hope that that is a philosophy and process that continues as we move forward, not just with the rollout, but with the development of future releases. But again, I think it's going to be really important to us to be able to have the information about how those back-end systems work and how we use them in conjunction with the front-end. A lot to try to take in at one time, but and I expect that your plan is to do that, but just wanted to make sure that we don't end up focusing so much on the rollout and the vaccine ordering on the front end that we don't have good attention and support for how we do our business differently on the back end.
So thank you very much for that comment. I think, you know, you mentioned the VOFA. Fully about a quarter of the requirements for the whole system are about the VOFA and forecasting, because we agree with you that it's, you know, it started, I had the opportunity yesterday to talk to one of the manufacturers who didn't understand why in the world we have all these VOFA updates and we can't just make a new product available much more quickly. And I tried to explain how the program has evolved from a program where we use that forecasting and it was a once a year exercise, and that's because we actually weren't using that in the way that we're using it now. And now that that information is sort of the cornerstone of the program on the vaccine side, of course, not the infrastructure, the work that you all are doing in order to plan and then assess how you planned and then plan and update your plan is absolutely central to the program. And it is a unique part of the way we do business that's a little bit different than the way other systems do business. And so I just want to assure you that we agree with you that it's at the heart of what we're doing. Ordering is relatively straightforward. I mean, Lance, I know, always likes to use the example of Amazon. People order all the time. They don't often have a spend plan and a budget that goes along with that. If they've got a credit card, that order will go through. One major focus of what we're doing now is to make sure that the way that VOFA thinks and plans is fully reflected in this system. Then we can improve upon that in future releases, but for right now, we want to be able to support that kind of planning because it's the heart of our vaccine program.
Nancy?
I think I might have misunderstood something when we saw most of this presentation at the All Hands meeting recently, and so I just want to confirm what I think I heard today, and that is that everybody in a VFC site would use the same, would be the same user. I mean, that there's not a separate logon or identification for each person who might be using VTRAX in that VFC provider site.
No, each user has to have a separate ID.
Oh, good.
And a separate email address.
Okay, that's what I thought, and why I thought that was useful was that I think it can be really hard for a grantee to know when staff has changed in an office and when there's somebody new coming in and they're just, and they weren't trained and the person who knew it left already. And this will be a way for, hopefully, for as long as the person who left didn't just tape up their ID to the wall.
Exactly.
For the grantee to know there's somebody new, we have some education to do.
Yes, very good point.
I was thinking about the registries and the data that we need to come back from VTRAX. So, Warren, do you want to be equally as brilliant on that one? Any ideas? How are we going to get the data back, and in what kind of time frame? I mean, things like
status and that kind of thing.
Order status, shipping date, lot numbers.
I think for release one, it may be a manual process where you have to either look that up on the VTRAX system, but maybe not. Tim, has that changed recently?
No,
or?
No, it's just that much of the solution. A lot of the solution hasn't arrived yet, so specifically how certain things will work is not entirely clear. But there is a requirement that information flow.
Probably don't need, now I have to tone it down just a bit, I suppose. There's a requirement that information flow to from the registries to VTRAX, which Warren talked about nicely. There is a flow back to the registries that you have today. We just don't know what that looks like. But as we know, you'll certainly know.
Do we have any sense of what release that would be in, release one, and perhaps during the pilot with the two registries? Oh, okay, great, thanks.
One other piece to add to that is it would be nice to have a nice sophisticated real-time interface with the first release. And to echo what we just heard, the details are still being worked out. But our contact center will need to be prepared to provide support in the event that it's not as sophisticated as we would like. We don't want to disadvantage the registry grantees. For those grantees whose providers order directly into the registry and learn how to use the application and self-teach on, oh, here's the status of my order, or call the contact center who can educate the user and go back into the system, click here, click there, okay, that's where you find it going forward. For those of you whose providers are going to be ordering directly into a registry or some other external information system, if the same bells and whistles are not readily available and interfaced, then our contact center needs to be able to pick that up. So we're doing some homework now to see what all it takes to make that happen, and exploring any other alternatives that may serve as viable workarounds. So more information to come.
I have a question. You mentioned ad hoc reporting, which is, I'm very interested in. I get a lot of requests for reports all the time. Is it going to be an onboard built-in query system, or is it just going to be an export of tables where we need to use an external software like SAS to analyze the data with?
Maybe Jeannie and I, you can kind of take team. I mean, there's a whole a system called Business Intelligence that's a very powerful report generating system, and you'll have the ability to use business intelligence to make reports. There'll also be a set of reports that I know Lisa, and actually I just turn it over to you on that in terms of the reports that are already existing that you want to be able to have access to as well. But I mean, it's going to be much more than just a flat file, what kind of happened.
Okay, and you mentioned all users need an email address. That could be a problem in South Dakota. There's a surprising high number of providers, well, not a high number, but there's a lot of providers that don't have internal email in their office.
Yeah, and it still will be possible for those that can't do it online that they can use the existing system and the state office can enter those orders on their behalf.
Exactly.
Any other questions or comments? This has been really good. If not, any closing remarks from
There's got to be other questions. Yeah. I can't. You can't possibly have been worn down by 3.5 solid days of conference. And so, all right, thank you.
I was just curious, if we're using the registry as an ordering tool, do we need to proof ID the users of the registry? Since they're going to be entering, okay, that's what I thought, but.
No.
Yeah, no, if they're not entering into VTRAX itself, then no.
Right. Well, I would just like to say, you said you wanted to change the subject. Are you?
Well, it's sort of an extension of what Claire
was saying.
Okay. If I may, I guess I'm sitting here, well, I'm really happy about VTRAX and rollout and, you know, no more VacMan, and we're going to be launching our online ordering system, and so we're really very excited about that, and so that's all good. I guess I'm just concerned about the thought that, I mean, we all work really hard, and we've just gone through, I think, probably one of our most difficult years with H1N1 and a pandemic, and I think probably most of us are really exhausted, and we're working in a situation where the ERA money was, at least for New York City, essential, you know, to keeping staff on board. And with all of the additional FIRR money, we were able to get a lot done. But we'll be facing, you know, we've lost about 30 people and $3 million on our city side. And now we're being told, well, there's a lot going on. We have flu ordering, timing of air money. There's school-based vaccination that we're getting pushed for. You know, talking about 50% VFC compliance visits. I mean, I think there's really a lot, and just working harder is just, you know, I don't think I can pull any more out of my staff. I mean, I have exhausted staff, and we're going to go through a very difficult year. So I guess just sort of throwing out that we really need, something's got to give in the program in terms of the dialogue about what's essential and critical and, you know, what would be really nice if we can do it, or given a given program's place. Like, I think we have really good VFC accountability with our registry. You know, we've been in a situation where we've raised our vaccine coverage when we've actually ordered less vaccine because we've brought VFC providers in line with what they're actually using. So I think there's really a lot more to vaccine accountability and preventing fraud and abuse and doing 50% compliance visits. And again, I don't know where I'd even get the staff to even consider doing that. So I guess it's, I guess, more of a comment, but the whole idea of just working harder without additional resources and just keep adding on, you know, more stuff and more stuff to the program, I think it's going to be really tough for a lot of us, especially in, you know, in the current economic crisis. I mean, I think many of us, we're facing layoffs for, you know, I've been able to prevent layoffs through, you know, some creative ways in how we've dealt with our fringe and so forth. And now I'm about to lose, four more staff on top of whatever already lost. And then I'm hearing that we need to work harder and add on more programs. So I'm just throwing that concern out, and I don't know whether, and I know you guys know, you've probably heard this from a lot of the program managers in the course of this week. But I think that really needs to be recognized, I think, by the division, and I think Claire brought it up. And I don't know whether there are other people want to sort of comment or where our opportunity is for dialogue to sort of, how we come into some equilibrium where we can keep pushing forward and not, it's not just adding on more with less resources. Thank you.
Okay. I think it sounds kind of similar to what Claire had said. And, you know, I know that we all are going to be working hard. I think one thing that's going to be nice is that at the end of this business transformation, we're going to have a system that's going to make it easier to do our jobs as well. And when we think about priorities that we have going forward, I think ERA is a huge priority that I think we'll be pretty much done with by the time this starts, but that's going to be critically important to do. There's very few things in the program that aren't important, and I think we are going to have a difficult challenge working ahead, like I said to Claire. And, you know, we are in this together. We're working hard as well, and, you know, we will get through this. And I know we will, because you guys always do get through this.
You know, and I just wanted to, just a few closing remarks, was really to thank everyone. We know many of you stayed over, even changed some of your flight arrangements, your travel schedules, to stay for this session. Wanted to thank you. Stay tuned. There's much, much more information to come. I know there were many questions that were asked today, and we were not able to provide definitive answers. And one reason is because if you look at where we are with the actual timeline, we're still SAP is doing the requirements analysis and starting to design the system. So stay tuned. What we want to do is to open the lines of communications, and we will continue to provide updates to you throughout the entire process as we go forward with development as well as rollout. So we want to keep the communication lines open. We will continue to provide you with updates and what's transpiring, and to communicate more with you. So with that said, I just want to thank everyone. And yes, these are challenging times, but you know what? We've gotten through more challenging times before. There is never an exact opportune time to implement any type of system. But one thing, as Lance said, we work very hard, we're diligent. And one thing I can truly say about the immunization staff and the supporting employees is that they're dedicated. There are very dedicated staff associated with this program, and you know, this is just another challenge, but once we complete this, we will truly have transformed the way we do business in the immunization program. So with that said, I just want to say thanks to everyone.
And I have one final housekeeping item. I think everybody should have received a very brief four-question evaluation form. Take those into the, everybody has them, Gary, or they drop them off in the back? You have them there? Okay, so you need to pick one of those up on your way out if you don't have one. Please provide us with your input on this session so that we can make things better prior to Vaccine University and other meetings.
And have safe travels. Yeah.